This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Les Enfants Terribles by Philip Glass is the latest production of the North Carolina Opera. The title, sometimes loosely translated as The Holy Terrors, and it tells the story of a brother and sister with an unholy obsession for each other. The siblings develop a game in which they compete to hurt each other. The North Carolina Opera is staging this particular project in commemoration of Philip Glass's 75th birthday. It combines the characteristic sound of the famous composer with the talented movement of the Carolina Ballet. Joining us in the studio now, Eric Michiko, General Director of the North Carolina Opera, and Wilson Sutherland, Associate Music Director of the North Carolina Opera and conductor of Les Enfants Terribles. Welcome to both of you. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Eric, why did you decide to do this opera?
Well, I love the music, and I got to know the piece a couple years ago and always wanted to do it. And over the summer, it just turned out that the dancers were available, and it fit the right niche in our season. You know, we try to do at least one contemporary piece every year to reach a new audience.
Fairly complicated little plot, but maybe you can summarize it for us.
Yeah, it's about four young people who live together in an apartment in Paris. Two of them are brother and sister, and two of them are their friends, another boy and girl. And it starts out when the brother, Paul, is injured in a snowball fight. So this will probably be the only opera you ever see with a snowball fight on stage.
Yeah.
And he gets home, and his sister has to take care of him. And they don't really like the arrangement because they're trapped in this apartment together. And so while they have some affection for one another, there's a lot of resentment. And it's very claustrophobic, and you've got these four teenagers, and their emotions are bubbling, and it leads to all kinds of really really interesting situations.
Interesting things and interesting music. Let's talk a little bit about Philip Glass, his 75th birthday coming up. This piece written in 2005, is that right?
1996.
In 96, so it's a little later in his career. How is the music different? How would you describe the music?
Well, I find that it echoes a lot of his music, even from earlier times. There's a certain Philip Glass sound. You can almost hear about 10 seconds of this opera and know that he's the composer that wrote the music for Kyanaskatsi, the cult movie from 1982. You can also hear echoes of his string quartets and his symphonies, the movie music. To me, it's completely in the Philip Glass style that we know and have come to.
It's a style, that we've come to know. He is called often by everybody else a minimalist. Apparently, he didn't like that term. He said, "My music is composed of repetitive structures." I suppose we don't really have to debate whether or not he's minimalist or not. But what was the point? What was he doing with those structures?
Well, see, what happened was when Glass was studying composition in the 50s, he studied with Nadia Boulanger in Paris and also did some work with Ravi Shankar. And he was introduced to Indian music. And in a lot of Indian music, there's this use of 22-note scales and a lot of repetitive structures. And he learned how theatrically potent this kind of music was. And so he adapted these techniques to traditional Western style of composition. And as he developed his voice in the 60s and 70s, became more and more well-known. And, you know, now he's written 28 operas, and it's actually amazing the variety among them.
Well, let's go back to one of those older operas. This one premiered in 1976, and maybe it best illustrates or better illustrates these repetitive structures and probably one of his more well-known works. This is from Einstein on the Beach.
One, two, two, three, four, five.
One, two.
I hear the repetition.
Definitely hear the repetition. You know, it's funny, when Glass was getting started, I mean, that was his first opera in 76. He did Satyagraha, which some people might have seen at the Met in HD this past fall. He was writing great, big, almost pageant pieces that didn't really have much of a plot. They were very diffuse. And it's almost as if once he got those under his belt, he realized that he could take his technique and use it in the service of a more traditional opera. So all of his latest stuff, or most of it, has a pretty straightforward linear plot. So the show we're doing, Les Enfants Terribles, it has a beginning, a middle, and an end. It's got characters you can recognize. But at the same time, all the music has Glass's distinctive voice in it.
I want to play a clip from Les Enfants Terribles, but I would like you to set it up for us because, as you say, the plot is more linear. It's something more in a narrative form. And tell us what we're going to hear now and what we need to know to hear this clip.
This is from Act One. It's Paul's sleepwalking scene. So Paul has just moved back in with his sister. Their friend Gerard has moved in with them. And, you know, he's sick. He's not all that well. And they discover him sleepwalking. And it's a movement. Just for dancers. There's no singing in this part. And I think it's just incredibly lovely the way you can hear this unfolding.
D'Argelot had been expelled from school. Paul felt sure he wouldn't see him again. He grew quieter. Sometimes at night, Paul walked in his sleep.
A little piece from Les Enfants Terribles, which will be performed by the North Carolina Opera on January 19th, 20th, and 22nd. With me in the studio are Eric Mitchko, the General Director of the North Carolina Opera, and Wilson Sutherland, Associate Music Director of the Opera and the Conductor. And Wilson, this is an opera that is played with three pianos.
Correct. Very unusual orchestration. That they comprise the entire orchestra for the piece. So some of the unique challenges compared to, say, traditional opera with a real orchestra, some 70 to 90 players, is that, as conductor, I'm in charge of keeping track of the three pianos, also in charge of cueing the singers. The repetitive structures that Glass introduces, which are actually encapsulated in each individual movement, provide interesting challenges because the singers can't rely on certain instrumentation, the oboe comes in here.
Right.
And so it's much more of a collaborative effort between the dancing and the singing. They have to be checking in with me.
Let me ask you, how do you keep track? I've always been curious about this, where there aren't these sort of moments in the music. The oboe comes in, the violins go out.
It's a lot of counting.
Is it just counting?
It is a lot of counting. And the hidden secret is that, as repetitive as it sounds, and as especially with this latest excerpt, it lulls one into a sense of comfortability. I can tell you that is not the case with three pianos going on.
Yeah, no, it's a lot of keeping track. And for the movement, go ahead, Eric.
No, I was going to say for listeners, an adjective we always use for Philip Glass's music is hypnotic. And I think that's what makes it so theatrically powerful. But if the performers get hypnotized, then there would be a problem because you've got to be on top of it.
But they have to be part of the music. Is Glass writing for the movement and with the narrative? There are other minimalist composers who will say, no, I'm sort of doing my own thing, and you're going to have to wait for the moment, and it all happens in you. It's very subjective.
In this opera, the mood of each scene is very different, and the music really captures the mood of the general scene rather than illustrating what a specific character is feeling at that moment. Do you think that, do you agree,
Correct.
Wilson?
Of course, Glass, being most well-known nowadays as a film composer, movies like Notes on a Scandal, The Hours. In this instance, he's taken a movie from the 50s in France, Les Enfants Terribles, adapted from the Cocteau novel, and is taking the libretto and now orchestrating it his way. So it's a little homage to his own method of composition.
Well, and the choice of instruments is actually inspired by the movie. The Melville movie, there's one scene where he uses a Bach concerto for four harpsichords, and it's so evocative. And that gave Glass the idea of scoring the whole piece just for a couple of keyboards.
How often has he worked with dancers?
This is his only dance opera that I know of.
Does that create a particular challenge for you? Because you not only have to get the music kind of in sync and get people coming and going on those cues, but also there's movement.
Luckily, we have a very talented choreographer, Robert Weiss, that's in charge of that department. Every now and then I give a stray cue to the dancers for their counts.
And you talked about scoring films as well. And, of course, Philip Glass is well known for scoring Koyaanis Katsi, which is, as you say, the cult film from the 80s. We have a little piece from that just to give you, again, a sense of the scope of Philip Glass music. That's from the film Koyaanis Katsi. In case you didn't know the title of that film, it's Koyaanis Katsi, Philip Glass. Listen, here's the thing about Glass. I mean, people either love him or they just don't get it. I mean, is this a challenge for you, Wilson? What attracted you? What brought you to the music of Philip Glass?
Well, I happened to see this movie, Koyaanis Katsi, when I was approximately 8 years old. I didn't know what kind of emotions I was feeling back then, of course, but having just seen the performance of the New York Phil doing this movie live with the movie showing definitely reignited my passion for Philip Glass, but it's something that I've carried with me for 20 some odd years and didn't know I liked. It's not such a challenge for me. It's more of a kind of a catharsis. Finally, I get to do the work of someone that I've admired for most of my life.
How about you, Eric?
Well, before coming to North Carolina, I was with the Atlanta Opera, and we produced a different Philip Glass opera there, Akhenaten. And it was just an incredible experience. And the audience absolutely loved it. And just seeing it all put together gave me real, real affection and respect for his work.
I think that's part of it, too, is you talked about Wilson seeing Koyaanis Katsi on the screen with a Philharmonic in the pit. Something about the movement, by having a performance of the music rather than just listening to it on a CD and headphones. A very different experience, in particular with Philip Glass.
Yeah, and I've discovered that, I mean, in rehearsals for this show, for Les Enfants, watching it as opposed to listening to the CD, it's a huge difference. You know, opera is the combination of all the arts, and you want to see it and not just hear it. And of course, it's a live performance, and that it makes a big difference.
It's contemporary music. It is music that does scare some people. Do you think he's developing a larger audience now that he's been around for a while?
Oh, there's no question. Yeah, I mean, all over the country and in parts of the world, you know, if you announce Philip Glass, that people want to come see it.
The opera itself is how are you doing? That's the question I have for you now. Opera in decline in most of the country.
I don't know about that. I mean, we're doing well. Ticket sales for this are robust. You know, opera, it speaks to everyday situations that people have. Everyone has these emotions, and these dramatic works and this music is really timeless. And so it's and we're seeing in lots of different places, especially with new works. There's now an audience for new operas that maybe there wasn't 20 or 30 years ago. And Glass is one of the composers, I think, that's responsible for that, because he for decades now, he's been writing music that people really like to listen to. And after a while of doing that, people started programming it.
Where do you think that audience is coming from?
A lot of it is younger people, people who maybe like new music but don't think they like opera or don't yet realize they like opera. At North Carolina Opera, we actually have a pretty young audience anyway. Over half of our audience is 45 or below. And I expect for this, that's even going to get younger.
Wow, that's interesting. For more than half the audience under 45.
Yep.
Very different from what's going on with, say, symphonic music and the orchestra, which I think has got a far different demographic. What do you do? What do you do next? What's next for the opera itself in terms of your creative vision?
Oh, well, our next show in April, we're going to do Verdi's Trovatore, which is completely different. It's a classic piece with a lot of absolutely great tunes, and we're going to do one show in Raleigh and one in Chapel Hill.
Do you think, you know, opera was originally a kind of real middle-class form? It was meant for people who didn't get the aristocratic music of the great patrons of the arts. You know, you could pay money to go see this stuff. You didn't have to own your own composer. It got away from that. We have a sense in this century that it's something highfalutin. So clearly it's kind of missed an audience for a while.
It did for a while, but again, I think that began changing a couple decades ago. And now that so many composers writing new music are writing music that people like. I mean, there are a lot of composers now, opera composers, who have audiences and have a following. I mean, this coming year, to take an example, Fort Worth Opera is doing four operas in their season, two of them by living composers. Now, that would have been the norm back in Verdi's day, but, you know, 30, 40 years ago, that would have been unthinkable for an American company. But now their audiences demand that, and we're seeing that in more and more places around the United States.
How about the storylines themselves? Are they more, because those, again, were very much in tune with what Italian audiences wanted to talk about. That's why soap operas are soap operas.
Right, and I think, you know, the 20th century, the 21st century tastes are a little different. You know, Les Enfants Terribles is about teenagers working out their problems in an apartment. That would not have gone over in Rossini's day, maybe. But for us, it makes sense.
With a twist. I mean, there's a whole dose of narcissism and some deep psychological stuff going on here.
Yeah, but I don't want to give away the ending. People won't need to be surprised when they come to the theater.
All right. And you can do that the 19th and 20th and 22nd. Thanks so much, Eric and Wilson, for being on the program.
Thank you.
Eric Michko is the general director of the North Carolina Opera, Wilson Sutherland associate music director of the same opera, and conductor of Les Enfants Terribles, which you can see performed by the North Carolina Opera January 19th, 20th, and 22nd. Go to ncopera.org for more information. Thanks for listening to our program. If you have a comment or want to hear a past edition of The State of Things, our website is stateofthings.org. State of Things is produced by Alex Granados. Our technical director is Robin Copley. The managing editor, Lindsay Foster Thomas. Susan Davis is our senior producer. And this is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.